My guest today is Karen Law, an award-winning independent folk singer-songwriter from Queensland's Sunshine Coast. Let the Light Back In is her fourth studio album, which was recorded with two of her children, whom she also tours with. In this club conversation, we talk about making music and writing songs with family members. Karen also shares about her healing journey since being diagnosed with MS and how creativity has played a part in her healing. There's lots of magic sprinkled in this conversation and a pervading sense of peace and harmony, something Karen's songs also embody. I'm delighted that you're here. Thanks for joining us. Welcome to the Magic of Songwriting podcast with iHeart Songwriting Club. In this podcast, we help you reconnect with and experience the transformation, the joy, and the magic of songwriting so that you can become the songwriter you've always dreamed of being. I'm Francesca De Valence, and I'll be your guide. Let it go. Big welcome to the Magic of Songwriting podcast. Karen Law, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for inviting me down here.
Pleasure, and thanks for taking the drive down. So you live in the beautiful Sunshine Coast of Queensland.
Live in Nambour, yes.
And it's, you know, sunny all year round, right?
Oh, pretty much.
This is, you know, the community up at the Sunshine Coast is quite a creative, collective, connected community, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It's quite an exciting place for songwriters and creatives. And I don't know if you probably won't remember this, but I first saw you, Francesca, at the Turn Up Music Industry Conference.
Is that where we connected?
Which is a great thing that gets run, bringing all sorts of top industry Muso people up to the Sunshine Coast so that, you know, we can be immersed in that. And yeah, you were one of the guest speakers, and that's where I first heard about it.
I can't believe that I didn't know that till just now. And of course that makes sense.
Well, we didn't meet.
We didn't meet
you
there.
You were speaking. I was in the audience.
Right.
And I went home and I joined.
Well, you've been a part
of
the club.
Actually, no, I didn't. I didn't go home and joined. I went home and I thought about it. And then quite a bit later I went, I'm actually going to do that now.
Okay. Yeah. Well, that's really lovely to know. I think because you've been in the club for 3 years or almost 3 years.
Yes.
Or 3 and a bit
years. Just over three years.
I feel like I don't remember the beginning. I just know that you're a part of our community.
Yeah. And look, I'm one of those people that once I do something, I like to do it properly.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess that's perhaps why I didn't commit straight away, but
I'm curious now, like, that we've just revealed this in minute one of the podcast. What was the hesitation about joining, and why did you have to think about it, if you want to share that?
Well, I think, like I said, probably because of the way you explained it, that this is a commitment.
Uh-huh.
And it was a new thing. And at the time, I was also in the process. I was probably just about to release my third album. So this is somewhere in 2018. And look, maybe I've got my dates wrong, but I think we'll find that this is true. Somewhere in 2018. And so I had a project that was on the go. And, you know, when you're not doing weekly songwriting, you think that it's going to take a big shift to put that into your life, mm-hmm. even though you made it quite clear it's just 1 hour. And I definitely had 1 hour a week, but I didn't know that I could just do it that quickly. Mm. So it seemed like a big thing. And I thought, oh no, because I've already got an album that I'm making, and that's where all my creative energy is going. And it felt like it would have been almost sidelining it, which is not what happens at all. It's, as you know,
yeah,
it's something quite different, and it actually just opens everything up.
One of the reasons that I'm making this podcast is because I want to help songwriters to up-level their perspective around songwriting and to open up to the possibilities of so much more than I've got enough songs for my album, so therefore I'm going to stop writing and yep. record, and then I'm going to get on the road for 2 years and I'm not going to really write much in that time. And then what I normally see is a bunch of touring artists who are paralyzed when it comes time to write again because they haven't written for so long and they're afraid that their songs that they've written have been toured and tried and tested. They've been selling music.
Yeah.
And then it's like, what if I can't write
that again. Or
I've got to be honest that I've heard that, and I know a lot of people feel like that. That wasn't my experience, but I was a very slow writer. And I just never, I never felt the need, or I didn't realize what else would happen when I sped up a bit.
So let's
when
talk
I
about
pushed
that.
A little bit. So I was somebody before who I would say I'm one of those classical four songs a year, by which I mean four properly good songs that I was happy with, that that, you know, my audience would love, and that I knew that I could put onto an album. So, and I was happy with that. I thought, yeah, that means I can make an album. Like you just said, that means I can release an album every 3 years if I want to. And I hadn't always done that, but I'd had some breaks in my career and different things. And equally, music hasn't, songwriting hasn't been the only thing that I've done. So I'm not relying on that to make all my money, or you know, or that's not the only thing that I'm doing. But so I was happy enough, I thought, with that four songs a year. And it's not that I ever felt stuck or like I couldn't do more. I just didn't realize that I wanted to do more, or I didn't know what would happen or why perhaps I should try and do more, and what could happen if I did. So that was the interesting thing.
So when you decided I'm going to go home and think about this, what helped you make the choice to try that? I mean, if you were releasing an album, you know, where did, was there a level of curiosity around what would happen?
Yeah, totally. It was almost like an experiment to see. So I'd released the album, and then, you know, and then you're back in that, well, now, and I don't know, what I tend to find is after I've released an album, I actually, I get freed up again. So when I've got, let's say, 12 songs that I'm waiting to record, that's when I stop writing because I think, oh, well, I'm done here, so I don't need any more. And once they're actually recorded and I've released them and started, you know, they're out there in the world, yeah, that's when I feel creativity opens up again. So I was in that space.
Mm-hmm.
And normally that would have meant, you know, four songs a year that would have come in, and maybe that have come in a little bit quicker in the beginning and then tailed off a bit. And so it was just that, the opportunity to go, okay, I could write, I could just wait for inspiration. Because that's what I was doing. I would write when there was something that I really felt drawn to writing about, or something just came to me in the night. You know, sometimes that would happen, but I didn't push it. And I thought, well, let's just see. If I sign up to this, what's going to happen? Am I going to write better songs? That was a possibility. Am I just going to write more songs? Will they actually be worse? Because I'm just going to write rubbish from now on. You know, what is actually going to happen? And yeah, I was curious to know.
I really honour that you asked yourself those questions. That's really beautiful insight, or at least, you know, the curiosity to see what would happen. How could I, you know, what would be the answer to those questions? So what are the answers to those questions?
Well,
after three and over 3 years of doing this.
Well, I mean, firstly for me, the thing that I hadn't realised was that just doing this as a commitment and making songwriting something I do all the time just makes me happier. It makes me more whole in myself in some way, because I mean, I've always been creative. I've always written songs, and I get to do that all the time. And interesting things have happened over the years. To begin with, I guess I'm not the one who can say whether the songs are better or not. That's a really hard thing to ask.
I feel like you would, ego aside, there would be a clarity that you would know that your songs are better or not.
They're certainly not worse. Okay. I'll go that far.
Okay.
And the other thing I do know about them is that they're more varied. So because also that the really good songs are not always the really good songs used to be ones that I felt really passionately about.
Mm-hmm.
It would be a subject either personal or political or social that I really cared about. Those are the ones that were, you know, my creativity would really get to work and I'd come up with something special. But now I've found, because I'm responding to topics every week, sometimes the really good songs are not ones that I'm particular, or that I thought I was really invested in as a topic. I think I've become more lighthearted alongside this, because I'm quite a serious songwriter. I do write about issues and politics sometimes, and and personal struggles. All of those things have a serious side.
Mm.
So on this last album, which was written, every single song I realized does actually have a link to the club. There are definitely some more lighthearted songs that I wouldn't normally have written and I've never put on before. Yeah, so more variety, more interesting, certainly hasn't taken away from what I did.
Yeah.
And also a lot of other projects and ideas have spun off from that, just from that thing of being constantly in the back of my mind, you know, being a songwriter week in, week out.
I call it being tapped in to an energy and having that constant plug in. It's like a recharge of creative power and energy that you can then do something with that.
Yeah.
Do you find that it sort of charges you up in a different sort of way? Whether it's fuel or whether, you know, fuel for, like you mentioned, other projects or.
I think it's
for your soul, you know.
Yeah. Oh, well, I mean, definitely. So for me personally, definitely. But look, and I guess at the moment I'm looking at it from a practical skill point of view of what does this practice do for the art of songwriting? I know what it does for me personally. Definitely it is a soul feeding thing. I think as a creative person, songwriting is my chosen, that's my favorite form of creativity. I've had a little go at painting and sometimes I write and those things are nice. But for me, that, you know, 3 to 5 minute song, distilling everything into words and music, that does it for me. And I definitely feel more whole when I'm doing that and I want to share that with people. But in terms of what does that weekly art of songwriting do, you know, for the songs itself and for my skill set as a songwriter, I think it also means that part of my brain is constantly on alert. You know, I guess it's like anything. If you're working in a job, it doesn't really matter what it is. You can then draw on those skills straight away because you're doing them all day. You know, if you were a landscape gardener in your job and then you noticed your friend's place and you know, they were doing a bit of gardening, you'd be jumping in there with advice and you'd be all, if you liked your job, you'd be all enthusiastic. Oh, you could plant this here and you could do that because you're using that skill all the time. So now I'm using that songwriter part of me is switched on all the time. It's not waiting in the background for inspiration and, oh, I must get that out now. It's always there. And so it sees more opportunities.
Yeah. And then having a weekly theme or something, you find it quicker to dive into that or easier to dive into that, less resistance around that?
I just do it.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I wasn't sure what would happen when I was just faced with it. But the truth is an idea pops in. And so I just do what you said. I just go with it.
Yeah.
There's an idea. Oh, look. And the other thing that's amazing for this is just having voice memos on your phone.
Yeah.
So everything I do in iHeart, I never record any better than simply singing into my phone. I don't try and produce it or record it in any way other than that one take into my phone.
Yeah.
And so as soon as I get an idea, the first thing I do is record that idea in. And if by the end of the week I really didn't get any further, I upload that and say, that was it, you know, move on to the next thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's something around that, you know, let's say it is a finished song. And when I say finished, I mean, you know, you've got a couple of verses, a couple of choruses, maybe there's a bridge in there. It goes for about 3 minutes.
Yeah.
And it feels like you've told the whole story. You've shared most of the message or all of the message. There's something, and that's what I call a finished song, for want of a better word.
Mm.
There's something in the first performances that I feel can't be replicated in a studio months later or years later, even when you go to record it. It's like the energy that you create it with is the energy that you record it with, and almost as if you can't go back to that exact energy that you pulled it in with. What are your thoughts on that? I totally agree.
And particularly, I mean, some songs in particular will do that. You know, my songs tend to be story songs, so that's what I do. I try to tell stories. They're either my own or they're done through other characters. And, yeah, the first time you tell that story, it's special.
It's really special. It's almost like it's not about the words. It's not about the melody. It's not about the chords. It's about the energy or the frequency that you then share it, you know, with your voice memos.
Yep.
With. That's it.
Yeah.
There's something intangible about that.
And the other thing you're doing now is you know that there's a little audience there of just the people in your group who are going to listen to that and you're going to listen to theirs. So you're not preparing it for the public. And they don't want you to produce it massively. They just want to hear your song.
Yeah.
It's a lovely space to be able to do that in too.
Tell me about what your group offers you or brings to you or what you get from that.
Wow. Well,
So you've been with some of those people for a while.
Some of them, yeah. For a while it was the groups were changing a bit, but I can still remember some of the people. I mean, it is lovely getting people who come in and out of your groups too. Honestly, the thing that I get the most from is some people are absolutely amazing at giving feedback. And like I always try and be really helpful to people. I hope that I am, but I know that other people, just in the things that they hear, and little comments that they make, they may not even realize it half the time, but because they don't know what I'm thinking about the song. They don't know how it, you know, you write a few notes sometimes if you've got time, but they don't know a lot and they are just reacting, oh, here's my reaction to it. And so those first things, whatever they say, are always incredibly helpful just to know what somebody else thinks.
Yeah, when you're giving feedback on something that you've spent an hour on, you're not sort of looking for the level of critique that you would if you're in a studio recording and you know that note and that chord and the timing of this could be a little different. It's more like how it's being received.
It's a gut reaction.
Yeah. And that feels good to know how people gut react to something or their instinct.
Yeah, it's helpful.
Yeah. And have you, for example, the album Let the Light Back In that you've just, you know, released at the end of last year.
Mm.
Did you put some songs on there that perhaps you may have discarded had you not had those gut reactions?
Oh, definitely, definitely. A couple of them in particular that I would have described as throwaway songs, and I probably did in the group. And so the fact that other people said, oh no, I think this might be more to this than you realize, that then gets me to test it out with a live audience. And then if I get a positive reaction from them, then it, you know, I think, okay, this one's going on the album. You know, it takes a while. I do a lot of live playing on Facebook.
Yeah.
So even though there weren't a lot of gigs, I could still test them out that way and people would soon tell me what their favorites were. And
I'm curious, was that for the song Bucket List?
Oh, Bucket List, totally. Yes.
I can imagine you just going, oh, here's a little throwaway song.
Well, also because I think when I first wrote it, it didn't have a chorus. By the time I uploaded it, it did, but I wrote that song and I would never have written it normally. I don't even have a bucket list. I don't really like the concept. So no way would I have written it. And then I wrote the verses and thought, might be something missing. Oh, that's right, a chorus. So I popped it, really in 2 seconds, put a chorus in, and then I, you know, uploaded it to the group. And really saying it's a bit of a throwaway thing. And somebody said, no, it kind of has a serious message too, which I hadn't noticed.
That's one of my favorite songs on your album.
Oh, there you go.
It's so light, yet it's so complex at the same time in its depth. I think that's what makes it complex. Maybe complex isn't the right word. It's really sincere.
It has a message, and I hadn't noticed that. Yeah. I thought I was just, because I wrote it really quickly.
Yeah.
So you don't know what you're drawing on, but I think the truth is we draw on the same things whether we're writing quickly or slowly.
Totally.
You know, it's our life experience. It's our view of the world. So, well, if it came out quickly, that's just a bonus.
Absolutely. Yeah. And there's such a lightness in obviously the music, the musical rhythm and the lyric and the repetition. It's really hooky and catchy, and I always find myself just putting it back on repeat.
Ah, good.
Yeah.
that's what we want.
It's very joyful. Yeah. I think that's yeah. In fact, the whole album has
one of the lighter ones. You know, that's one of the more fun. I think of that one and what I call the sandwich song, which is actually called People Are Like Sandwiches. And again, that was written to the theme of sandwich, which, yeah, we all know about sandwiches, but I would not have written a song about a sandwich. And I just sat there just because you told me to. You know, the iHeart theme for the week. So that's why I did it. And it came out and I went, oh yeah, this has got something. Again, it's a message about life, a way of looking at life, that people are like sandwiches because it doesn't matter what's on the outside, it's what's in the middle that counts.
And I remember when you did a Facebook Live on that and you shared that, and that was really, really well received.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah. And I think because it's got such a unusual hook, you know, that people are like sandwiches.
It's quirky.
It's so quirky, yeah. But there is so much depth in that. So that's your process. You write it, and then when it's been received by your group and you have like a bit of instinctive reactions from them, then you take it to your audience?
Yeah, well, then I would make sure that it's finished. You know, I don't want to change any words or, you know, just check. And then, of course, I play it with the family. So, and often I've done that first, so I'm also really lucky.
Tell the listeners about the family.
So all three of my kids have ended up being musicians, which is just the biggest joy to me. And not only are they musicians, but they're all still keen on performing with me and are happy to, because I play at folk festivals, folk clubs. I'm a real folk writer. And although they all have other projects as well, they still love doing folk with me. So my first kind of check with anybody, often even before I play it to the group, would be I'll play it to whoever's around. That could be Murray, who plays guitar with me a lot. And although he doesn't write a lot of songs, he is really good at arranging. So he's great at knowing whether the song's any good or not too. Mm-hmm. Like if he likes it, that's a good recommendation. And then my daughter Hazel, who is also a songwriter, and we often send songs to each other. If she's not living at home at the time, then we'll message each other and share them. So to me, the song really comes to life when I play it with other people in the family, with some of my kids, because they're the ones who tour with me and perform with me and record with me at the moment.
That's beautiful.
Yeah.
So Hazel, yes, she's a songwriter, and actually both Murray and Hazel have been a part of iHeart Songwriting Club at some point.
Yes, and then my youngest daughter, Roanna, who's also a musician, she plays bass with me, you know, and also she has written songs too. She writes with Hazel for their duo.
Yeah, so Hazel's got a duo. And
Hazel and Roanna, well, it's now a trio because a friend of theirs, Matt, has joined them. So their band is called North and Elsewhere.
I didn't realize that there were two sisters. I thought it was Hazel and a friend.
No, that's Hazel. Goodness. No, that's Hazel, Roanna, and now their friend Matt.
Oh, wonderful. Yeah. So they just released a single, or an EP, actually.
They've released an EP.
It's beautiful.
And some of those songs were written in the club too.
I know. It's so lovely. We've actually had a few people, you know, parents with their kids or husband and wife. We've had, mother and daughter in the club, mother, daughter, son in the club, father, daughter. I mean, it's just like this.
It's a great thing.
It's so great that you can just be, because you may not be in the group with Hazel, but you'll have the same theme.
Yes.
And so, you know, what was your take on that? Just like, you know, just like if it was done online anyway, but that must add a different, you know, energy in the home to be making music together, and
it adds to it. I mean, look, to be honest, we're a very musical family, so there are instruments everywhere. We play every day, and songwriting and this songwriting, the fact that it's now something that we do every week, everybody's aware of it. It's not just me who's writing the song. Everybody else knows I'm writing it too. Sometimes, you know, they'll say, "Oh, what's the theme for the week?" And then I'll play it back to them, you know, what I've got at the end of the week. So it just becomes part of the music that we do.
That's really special.
Yeah.
When I listen to your previous album, so that's your fourth album, Let the Light Back In, is that correct? I was really taken with how I felt listening to it. And I have recently, possibly in the last 2 years, become very aware of how music really makes me feel. Now, I think unconsciously everyone has a feeling response to music, but whether they're conscious or aware of how music actually transforms how they feel. And so it's really made me very conscious of what I listen to and the words of the songs that I listen to and what energy I want brought in, you know, what you look at and what you focus at, you bring more of about in your world. And what struck me as really special was that everything on your album really resonated with me. It had an energy of peace and an energy of harmony, energy of joy. And for that reason, I wanted more of that. I wanted to continue listening to it. So it's an album that I enjoy listening to and want to listen to, not just like here's somebody in my community that's released a great album that I think has got great songs on it, but I don't know how I feel about this message in my world, and I'd rather maybe just appreciate it for the great song that it was and a great performance, but I'm not going to listen to it regularly. Mm-hmm. Whereas yours is something that I want more of, that frequency in my world. And I don't know, I'm curious if you intended that, if that's just your vibe and that's what you've created, or how you experience music and that sort of how it transforms how you feel. Any of those topics, very broad, go for it.
Yeah, look, I mean, firstly, I love that you say that because I would want, although I don't believe I consciously set out to do that, nevertheless, I love that it does appear to have that effect on people, and you're not the first person to have said that. And I think one reason might be that music is, for me, it's always been a way of making sense of everything in the world, but also of just subtly shifting that focus to get the world to be more where I want it to be. You know, and that's in a healing way. Personally, and I can talk about this in, you know, a bit more, but I've had my own physical health healing journey that really has, I feel like it's there through my music. You know, sometimes you can analyze song lyrics and you don't realize how much of yourself is going into them. The song might, the theme might be about a sandwich, but somehow everything that I've lived and everything, the way that I look at the world, somehow ends up there in the song anyway, even though I thought it was just about a sandwich. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
You don't realize how your own, you know, the way you present in the world, how all of that inevitably ends up in your song. So if that's there, then that's, I guess that's because that's what I'm trying to bring into my life. And I've done that partly to, so I mean, the backstory is that I had a huge break from music. I made one album when I was in my late 20s, which, you know, I think is quite peaceful too. It would be interesting for you to listen to that one actually and see is there a shift in energy. But I think I've always been about peace and trying to heal the world, even before I realized that I might need to heal myself along the way, so that energy might still be there. And then I had a big break, had three kids, came up here to Queensland. And then in 2010, I was diagnosed with MS, which was like a huge shock. I had no idea. And physically, it was difficult at the time. And I made some huge changes. I quit my job. I decided to focus on, you know, on healing and on myself and on what I really wanted to be doing with life as well, which, you know, I was lucky that I actually could do that. I was looking after the kids, so they were all pretty young. So in a sense, I had that space to do that. I wasn't out, you know, in some high-powered full-time job and I didn't have the space. I was basically being a mum. So I was able to really have a good look at life and see what I wanted to do. And I decided to go back into music much more. I became an instrumental music teacher and I started writing a lot more songs again. And alongside my own healing journey physically and also I you know, did a lot of personal work, overcoming a lot of anxiety that I'd always had and had never really addressed. So there was a big journey that I went on. And while I was doing that, I became much more immersed in music again. And of course, all of that just poured out into songs. So the next album that came out, and I started meditating, that was a huge thing. And I'd never done that before. So I've been a meditator now for 10 years, and that's just a thing that I do. And I'm sure that actually got quite a lot of, like, so on this last album, there are two songs that are literally about meditation. It's important to me. But I think, you know, like I said before, whoever you are as a person, that comes out into your song. No matter what, you can't stop it. So you're going to get some of that essence, whatever I write about.
Mm, that's a beautiful way of putting it, the essence of you through the song. I'm curious if you're, you know, thank you for sharing that. And I'm curious if you were making music before you were diagnosed.
Oh,
I mean, as in recently, had you been immersed in music?
Not as immersed. The album that I made in my 20s, yes, obviously, and I was touring that before we had kids. And then after the kids, I did make one. There's no public record of this anyway. You won't find it. But of course, being creative, when I had kids, I started right from the moment they were born, really, I started making up songs for them. So everything we did was done to a song. I can remember it.
Yeah.
You know, I'd be there, there'd be, you know, lying on the changing mat after the bath, and I'd pick up the towels, and I wrote a song about a windmill, and I can still picture myself there in the bathroom waving these towels around my head, singing the windmill song, because it entertained the babies lying there. So, I then wrote 8 children's songs, and they did end up on a very limited run CD, and it was called Monster. And I think there are 100 copies of it in the world out there somewhere. No digital trace of it, though.
I love that.
So there you go. There are some people who know about that.
Okay.
But that was it. So, in my head, I was still doing stuff. But there was a big gap from 1998, when I made my first album, to 2014, when I released my second.
That's a big gap.
And in the middle, just wrote. And recorded these 8 children's songs that my kids love. They say, oh, they were my favorite children's songs.
Mm.
They didn't grow up on the Wiggles. They grew up on the Monster album. No one else knows what that is.
So special.
Yeah. I also was playing, just at home. I would sing a lot. A lot of them would be my songs, but also some of them would be other people's songs, like The Waifs or Michelle Shocked. But the kids growing up didn't realize that I didn't write all of them. They just assumed, because they heard me writing songs, they just assumed everything mum sings, she wrote it. So they grew up. It was a long time, then maybe they'd be 15 and they'd hear the real version on the album and go, oh, wait, you didn't write that.
Oh, that's what I would have thought, that they would have said, Mum, the Waifs are singing your song.
Oh, no. That would have been better, wouldn't it? No, I think they were old enough by then. They realized, that's not one of Mum's, right?
That's so special.
And I just think, wow, you thought I could have written that. That's lovely what your kids think you're capable of.
Yeah. So how's how's your health now? You're meditating regularly, you're writing songs regularly. Are you in remission from MS?
Yeah, so I very luckily, and I'll give it a quick plug in case anybody else here needs to hear this, that there is a very well-educated doctor in fact, a professor of medicine in Australia called George Jelinek. And he was diagnosed with MS in 1999. And he was an emergency doctor at the time, but he did a lot of research for himself, and he discovered all of these things that you can do to stay well. And he developed a program, and I follow it to the letter. And yes, meditation is part of it, exercise, sunlight, vitamin D, and a plant-based plus fish, very healthy diet.
This sounds like it's my lifestyle.
Well, you'll be fine then. But I mean, it has a lot of benefits for many things. But and also he, part of the reason I ended up coming back and really looking carefully at my life was that he also recommends that people do that. Pay attention to your spirit, pay attention to your purpose in life. What are you here to do? And make sure that everything's in balance, because how can you truly be healthy if that's not? So that was a big. There was a push there, and it seemed urgent. It seemed important, and I know that steering my life back towards music has definitely been a good thing.
I love the question, "What's your purpose in life?" And I asked myself that question about 10 years ago for the first time, and that was the beginning of the opening. Like when you ask questions, you start getting answers. And until you've asked questions.
Which is why people often don't ask them.
Is it, or do they think that asking a question with no clear answer is a bit inane? Why ask the question if there's no actual answer? Depends, I suppose, how logical you are.
Yeah, I suppose it is. Yeah, no, but it's certainly true. Yes, you don't need to think that there might be an answer. You just need to ask the question.
So when did you ask yourself that question, or when did you become curious about what your purpose in life is? And is it what you've said, that I'm here to heal myself and the world? I paraphrased you.
Yeah, I like that. Because I wouldn't have been able to put that into a sentence so succinctly. So yes, I think it is.
Yeah.
I think it is. And in whatever way that takes me. And for a while that's been, and I think so through my songs, yes, I am trying to be helpful in them. I don't think I would write them if they weren't, you know, in the back of my mind. And that's why it doesn't matter what theme it is for the week. I'm always going to be looking for some way of bringing comfort or joy or hope.
And you know that if you bring it to yourself, you bring it to others, right?
That's true.
Just like if you can love yourself, you can love others.
Yes. Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm curious when you started asking yourself that question. Was it because of this doctor?
Totally. Totally. So I attended a retreat and he ran the retreat. And as well as teaching us about, you know, the practical things that we could do, we also started meditating. And that's a practice that I kept up. And yeah, we were encouraged to ask those questions. And we asked them in meditation and in sessions at that retreat that this is hard, but actually it's essential for healing. And I ended up coming away from there thinking, yeah, okay, I can't just heal one bit. If I'm going to heal, I actually have to do all of it, which is a way bigger task. And I wouldn't have.
Do you mean like mind, body, spirit, or like when you say one bit?
Yes. Okay. Yeah. 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 I mean, it's not just. So I'd gone there thinking, well, MS is a physical disease. And if there is. I was very, very. I am still very practical and down to earth. But I wasn't acknowledging my spirit at all at that time, even though I think it was there. I think I can now see where it was. But at the time, I was very practical, down to earth. And I was looking at it scientifically, and the evidence stacked up. So that's why I went. And then when I got there, I realized, but there's more than just the physical here. And also I realized that there was some mental health issues that I could definitely, I would benefit from addressing those too.
And that was the anxiety that you mentioned.
Yeah, that's been liberating. I didn't even know the extent that it was affecting me and that it had been there for most of my life.
Mm.
And so I got help with that and definitely a lot freer now.
I've talked about this in a previous episode. Some people say, Francesca, you know, you appear always to be doing what you want to do and what you love and be joyful and at peace and in harmony. And I'm like, yeah, I actually am. And I think genuinely people don't feel it's real. Like they're like, you must have really shitty days. And I'm like, well, I actually kind of don't. and I do think it comes down to the mind, body, spirit practice or whatever. I'm just going to use those words because they're very accessible words. So what are you doing physically that's allowing your human body, this meat suit that we are in, to be able to be flexible and strong and do the work? Like if you sit at a desk all day long, which sometimes I do, I've got to be fit to do that. Like I know it sounds weird, but you've actually got to be fit to do that. Otherwise your body will fall apart.
Yes.
You know, what are you doing with your mind to keep your mind learning and curious and, you know, maybe learning a new skill and staying present, you know, mindfulness. So you're doing that around meditation. And then for the spirit, you know, that also could be meditation, of course, and creativity. And what are you doing to channel your higher self and stay connected with purpose? I think it's those three things and addressing those three things, which is exactly what you did in that retreat 10 years ago, that you've continued to practice. And, of course, back to body is also what we put into our body physically.
Yeah.
Food and water and drinks and all those sorts of things. And how the practice of that, like the actual practice itself or the lifestyle opens us up to so much more.
And as you've been saying that, I just the word intuition and trust have just keep coming into my mind that and how they relate to your purpose. Because if you do have an intuition of a direction that you need to go in, it's just trusting that.
Yeah.
And allowing that to happen. And then how that links in with creativity too. Because creativity is intuitive. You put a word in front of me and something comes up and then it's trusting just to go with that. And it's the same with life, isn't it?
Absolutely. And when you can practice it every week in an hour in a song, which of course has no detrimental, like there's no detriment to that. There's no downfall. There's no...
No side effects.
There's no side effects.
This is what we love. This is what I love about the, you know, the MS, it's called Overcoming MS, the program. there are no negative side effects. Of course, there are no negative side effects to writing a song. How could there be?
And I think some people, if they are not in a practice of writing regularly, there's a lot writing on those four songs a year, right? As opposed to 52 songs.
The pressure is huge.
The pressure is huge to get those four songs good enough to be added to your set list and things like that. So there may be a negative side effect for those people. It's like, this song has to be good. This song has to be the one that goes on my album because I've got don't have enough songs.
And frustration that, I'm not doing it. Or, you know, hope inspiration comes knocking tomorrow.
Yeah.
And you don't feel you have any control over that. But that's interesting because, of course, once you start writing regularly, it is inspiration. But when you say that word, the implication is, I have no control over that. But that's not true, because it's sort of a muscle like all the others. And you know, isn't that great to know? These things that appear to be magical. Oh, yes, I just was inspired to write this song. It came to me in the night. Feels like magic, but you can make that magic far more likely by having this weekly
showing
practice.
Up.
And this is similar thinking of when people think it's somehow magical that you can overcome an apparently incurable disease like MS. It's not magic. It's because you're doing you're doing particular things, and it's also not guaranteed.
No.
But it's remarkable how many times it works, and it is now being scientifically tracked and researched. So we'll be able to say, well, what are the chances of you in fact stabilizing if you do these things? But they're very high. And it certainly isn't magic, but people still think that because they look at it and go, wow, you did that. Like when you see a creative person and go, oh my goodness, that song, where did that come from? But if you track it back, and maybe it's just that it came out of nowhere, but it probably didn't. It probably came out of what's actually quite a scientific practice. This thing of every week, you log in, you get your theme, you allocate your hour, and you think about it, and you're part of a group. That's not, it seems magical, but it's not magic, is it?
I mean, I think it's completely magic, but I don't need science to prove or disprove that. So as in, like, I'm happy to, I am on board with magic.
The songwriting process, I agree.
Oh, you mean
what I
the
mean
practice?
Is you can turn it on. You can actually, it's like dialing up magic.
Agree.
Just because we use the word magic doesn't mean that we can't
control
do anything
when the
to
magic...
bring more of that into our life.
Correct.
It implies that it's out of our control. And on some level, of course, it is. And that's the beauty of it.
Oh, thank you so much for bringing that perspective. I think I missed it. So I want to just, for our listeners again, to go. So what Karen said is that the implication that songwriting is magic sort of leaves it a little bit too much to chance. And that you're saying that we're actually creating the structure or the container or the space for the magic to drop in, which therefore is controlling the space where the magic comes in some way.
It's inviting it. It is creating that the possibility, and even you could say the likelihood of magic, but it's still incredible when it happens, and we still don't really know, do we, how one day we can sit down, at the piano or with our guitar, and the idea just, there it is. But I do know that happens, more frequently when there is that bit of structure in place, which almost seems counterintuitive.
It does.
Putting a structure in place to invite magic.
Well, I mean, if you want to turn on a tap to access water, you got to go to the tap and switch it on. Like, to me, it's like, whilst it's pretty amazing that water can come out of tap and we can just drink it, there's still, I think because it's tangible and visible and like an actual physical structure of a tap or something like that. But I do think it's really similar to songwriting. It's like, you're right. It's like, I go to the tap and now I'm going to turn it on, and then I get this fresh flowing water.
Yes.
Or I get this song idea that comes, and now I'm just going to shape that into something.
Yeah, and I guess that, where that analogy changes a bit is that when you turn on the tap, you're always going to get water.
Mm.
But it's still the tap, so you're always going to get creativity. But that's where the magic comes in. Mm. You don't know what that's going to look like on a given day, because you don't know who you're going to be on that day. Like we said, everything that you are goes into that song. So how do we know? But we've got to turn it on.
Okay, so then the analogy then to make it more correct is that this songwriting practice is like walking to the tap every week but not knowing what's going to come out. But you know that if you walk there and turn it on, something's going to come out. Okay.
Yeah.
I like that very much.
I love analogies, but yeah.
And I'm so glad that we've molded it.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think a lot of people just feel like it should come to me. Well, that's a little lazy. It's a little lazy.
Yeah.
Go and work it.
And also it's actually just not how it works,
no,
is it?
No.
It's not. Yeah.
It's really not. So is there anything more about when you think songwriting and magic and the magic of songwriting and what that means to you, is there any other part of that that you feel like we haven't tapped on already today?
I guess the other thing that's becoming more magical is the whole collaboration, which I had never collaborated before. And maybe because those four songs a year, they were pretty precious to me and I was going to hang on to them. I wasn't going to trust anybody else with one of those. I don't know if that's what was going on, but, you know, it was a rare thing. So it didn't occur to me to write with someone else. And also probably I wasn't used to sharing rough ideas. So that thing of, oh, here's my throwaway for the week. And often when I say that, they really are. Sometimes they're not. But I don't mind. I can share them with my group. So I'm used to offering up whatever has come to me and not being judgmental. And for collaborating, you have to do that because, you know, every idea is an idea. Every idea has to be valid. And you have to be prepared to have bad ideas in front of somebody else, don't you?
Yeah, absolutely.
Otherwise it doesn't work. And then, you know, discard them quickly. And I know I came in and did the speed songwriting a couple of times.
Yeah, on ABC Radio.
Yeah, with you. And that's possibly the first collaborating I'd done, actually.
So for the listeners listening in, for a good 2 years, iHeart Songwriting Club got our members that were either passing through Brisbane or could travel down to Brisbane or up to Brisbane or we're living in Brisbane. We got about four or five songwriters together in a row.
I think there were four the day I was there.
And the listeners from the radio station would give us a theme and a guideline. It would basically amp up what we do in the club because then, you know, the announcer, Kelly Higgins Devine, would say, okay, now give us the name of a place and the name of a person and give us a genre and give us like a color that needs to go in there. So they're basically just like really amping up in a really fun way what we do. But not only was it with all those extra guidelines, but we also had four people that had to write a song together and we had less than an hour. Sometimes we only had 20 minutes and up to 40 minutes and then we would have to play it live on air. But it was just super fun. So we would go into the green room knowing the theme and the genre and all those sorts of things and then come up with something. So that was the first time you collaborated.
I believe that was my first collaboration. I don't even think I'd started doing any within the family at that point.
But Murray had come along that day.
He came that day because we were playing, I think it was Bucket List, in fact.
Yes, you did.
That I had just written that. It obviously wasn't recorded yet. And I played that as an example of a song. And so because we played together, he was there. And then he joined the club.
Yes, that's right. And if you're interested in listening to that, it's on our YouTube channel, iHeart Songwriting Club YouTube channel. There's an ABC Speed Songwriting playlist and Karen Law and Murray Law are performing the song that we wrote. I have no idea what the song was.
Well, I did a couple and I now quite can't remember. The second one I think was like had a bit of a Fleetwood Mac theme because I remember you saying something like, think Fleetwood Mac and then lower your expectations.
Just definitely which sounds like something I would
so
say.
That was, yeah, which was probably accurate, but, you know, it was fun.
You've got a great memory.
It was funny.
I think all of those have been quite fun. There's been one that was so untenable, I didn't think we were going to get there.
Right.
And the guideline was that we had to write a dubstep, in dubstep style, and I was so out of my depth.
I don't think I even know what dubstep is.
Oh, let's not talk about that.
It's the stuff of nightmares, is it?
Yeah, it was really tricky. And I'm really grateful that we had a high school music teacher with us because she would, you know, she was into loads of what younger people are into. Not that older people are not into dubstep, but I didn't know what we were working with here, really. And she was great. We got GarageBand out.
But yeah, I'm glad that wasn't my week.
Being back to collaboration, but in that space, it is really just about throwing as much as you can out there and then seeing what can be shaped, isn't it?
Yeah.
And
having fun with it.
And how is that magical for you? How is that magic?
Well, most of the collaborations I've been doing at the moment are mostly with my kids and particularly with Hazel, who's the main songwriter of the family. And it's just magical because she's my daughter and we get to share this thing together.
Can you share a song, share about a song that you and Hazel have created together and about the experience?
Yeah, well, look, I'll share this one because it's probably the most joy I've ever had from the actual process of writing a song. And it, because of the particular situation where it happened. So this was back during one of the lockdowns, and Hazel was actually in New South Wales. She'd gone down to work a ski season that ended up getting cut short, and she lost her job and then got stuck in New South Wales, unfortunately. She was living away from home for the first time. I think she was probably still 18 at the time. She's 19 now. And so she was there and unable to get home. But then finally, this had been going on for a couple of months, and we'd been trying to find ways to get her home easily. And then she ended up in the border zone. And finally I was able to go and visit her. And obviously we'd been talking on the phone a lot and you know, sharing music with each other. But I was able to go and visit her. She was in the border zone, so I booked a treehouse. Literally in the middle of nowhere because
like
I was
a treehouse.
It was a treehouse. It was gorgeous. It was like in Byron Bay hinterland, and it was a room that there was only one room that had walls, and that's where he slept. And everything else was sort of around the edge. You just have to imagine this, looking into the trees. So there were no walls on the outside of it. It was like a deck, a very deep deck. And there was a lounge and the kitchen was there too.
In a tree?
Well, they called it a treehouse. It wasn't in a tree, but it may as well have been because then it looked directly into trees.
Oh, beautiful.
So no, it was on the side of a hill, but you felt like you were in a tree. And no, it wasn't actually. That would have been extra special, wouldn't it? But it was up at tree height, and it was just this one room and then like open around the edge. So we were heading there for a weekend, and I was only allowed to see her, not anybody else. And of course, she took her guitar and I took mine, and we were bound to do that. And the theme for the week was lentils in the club. And I'd got as far as just writing a chorus, which, you know, the thing that I often do, the first thing that comes into my mind, I'll record it on the phone. So I'd got this little chorus and I thought, yeah, I quite like that chorus. And I probably was expecting that I would just upload that and that would be it for the week because I was going to be busy. Anyway, when I got down there, I played it to Hazel, as I always do. And, you know, we were actually able to meet in person. So it was beautiful, and we were able.
The vibes were high.
They were. It was a special moment. That song became part of that weekend. And once I'd played it to her, she said, oh, we should finish that. We should just write that together this weekend. So that's what happened. And so the chorus already, it implied some characters were in the song, but we didn't know who they were. It was just two people talking to each other. I hadn't invented the characters, but she invented them and wrote the first verse. And then we kind of finished it off together from there. And before we left, I recorded it on my phone with the two of us singing it together. But the thing is, we found it so funny. There's a line in it that, you know, we just think we're so funny. And we could barely get through it in the original recording because every time we got to that line, we would just break down laughing, and it was lovely.
So what's the name of this song?
Oh, the song is called Dinner in Suburbia.
Oh, lentils. I love it.
And yeah, I mean, it's effectively brand new. I have no idea if it'll ever be recorded or particularly performed. I expect we'll perform it when we're together.
Yeah.
Might be something that we do then. But you know, not that that's the thing. That song has just brought me joy.
Yeah.
And I don't know what it will bring to other people, but to me, it's just the fact that I was able to write it there in that weekend with Hazel, it was lovely.
Well, we've got a really special treat today. So our performance is actually the original recording made on voice memo with Karen and Hazel in pajamas in the treehouses. I don't know why Hazel's eating popcorn in her pajamas, but obviously this is a nighttime, not a morning thing.
And so we are going to share, with your permission and Hazel's permission, the actual recording made in the energy of the song. And there's lots of giggles, and I think it's really joyful.
And this is, I do too, and this is what actually I uploaded to the group, so it sits in iHeart. Mm. It's that recording. That's partly why we made it. But, yeah, we were finding it very hilarious at the time. We just about got through it.
So here they are, Karen and Hazel Law, performing Dinner in Suburbia.
I'm just going to eat popcorn in the background. I don't think I can do it now.
Go on.
Okay. Tom and Sue on a Monday morning. The coffee is brewing and the car won't start. He's got a new job in the big city now. It's not looking pretty, but at least it's better than Kmart. She spends her days painting pretty pictures of things inside her head that no one wants to buy. She calls it modern art, he calls it a waste of time, and when she asks him outright, he does his best to lie. Oh, pass me the bag of lentils, my dear. Have you seen the price of rentals round here? Dinner in Suburbia, and we're drinking wine, not beer. Tom catches the bus while Sue lifts up the bonnet of their old Honda Civic that was made in 94. He likes to think of himself as a bit of a mechanic, but it's Sue who wears a tool belt soon as he steps out the door. She gets the engine going just as he gets home from work. He says, did you take the dog out for a walk? She says, I would have liked to, if only we still had one.
I took it too. Last week we probably need to talk.
Oh, pass me the bag of lentils. Have you seen the price of rentals round here? Dinner in Suburbia, and we're drinking wine, not beer. Dinner in Suburbia, and we're drinking wine, not beer.
Oh, so cute. It's like that was not meant to be heard by thousands of people on a podcast, yet what a joy to have a little insight into a connection between mother and daughter, and straight after that, joyous creation process.
Yep. It makes me happy every time I hear that.
Yeah. I mean, we've both got massive smiles on our faces.
And look, the feedback from that week, you can have a look at it, but it has less to do with the actual song and more to do with just the joy within that recording.
Oh.
You know, that's magic.
It is magic. To me, it's not just the content, it's the context, it's the everything. Oh, yeah. I don't know, there's so much that I want to put together around what this magic is, but thank you so much for sharing that with us. And the line about the lentils and rentals, what a cracking rhyme.
I was happy with it, and I guess because of that, that's why I took it down and played it to Hazel in the first place. I was a little bit proud of that and went, oh, you got to hear this chorus. So,
and the characters, like, they really, you got to like make up the crazy stories about them.
Yeah, I think Hazel started that, so I knew that there were two people, obviously. I assumed that they were, a couple, and that was the chorus, and then she just started with a verse, and then, they became Tom and Sue, and we gave them this life. And I can't even remember now how the thing with the dog happened. You know, the dog who's gone to the pound and the guy hasn't noticed for a week. But that's why we just every time we got to that line, we were just killing ourselves because of the idea that you could actually, have a relationship and not notice something like that the dog's been missing for a week.
Yeah, we are dog lovers here, but it's just a story. It's made up.
It is made up.
And it's quite funny. And
I don't know. I was thinking then when you know we were listening back to it again, thinking, so is there anything, is there a more serious side? Because we were talking earlier about how often, you know, that more serious side comes through. There doesn't have to be. But I guess if there is, then in highlighting, you know, some of the more vacant ways that we can be living, it questions, is this really what life is about? Is this what it's come to?
Yeah.
Or is there something more? Like there's an underlying thing of there could be something more than this.
Yeah.
Or it can just be a bit of fun and a bit of joy, and there's nothing wrong with that.
That's true. And if you wanted to, you know, ask the question, is there more than this? Is there more to life than this? That would be a great bridge. And that's what I love. That's what I love about a bridge is that it really can take the song somewhere else that you may not have known that it could go there.
So maybe what you're saying is this is still part of the iHeart process, and this is now, you know, this song may not even be finished. Who knows?
I love it as it is, but we're just talking about, you know, the question that you could ask based on this, like the vacancy, the lack of presence perhaps, or noticing and awareness, you know, and if you did want to add that in.
If that needed to be made more explicit.
That would be the place for it, right?
Yeah.
So, Karen Law, how can people hear about your music and how can they follow you? Where do you want people to go to after listening to this?
All the usual places. I'm there. So I'm on YouTube. If people want to actually buy or download from me directly, that's Bandcamp is the best place. Streaming wherever you stream.
Yeah. Okay, great. And Let the Light Back In is the name of the fourth album.
Yes.
And the one released in 2021.
Yes.
And who knows, by the time people listen to this in future years, you may have more albums out. And given that you're writing songs most weeks.
Yeah. And you know, for more live updates of the brand new stuff, Facebook is where I tend to perform it.
Yeah. And you've got a beautiful connection with your Facebook audience. So I really like following you over there and seeing your, you know, you just this, you know, every week pretty much you're posting a new video with a new song that you've written.
And again, fairly rough. It's just, it's rough and ready. It's here it is. This is what I do.
And you're sitting in your lounge room.
Do you like it? Yeah.
It's real.
It's an immediate connection. It's great. So come and join me there. I love interaction.
You don't put on any airs and graces. You just show up as you. And it's really refreshing.
Yeah.
And actually really empowering too for others to go and see someone being really real as an artist, not, you know, showing up in your, you know, casual clothes in your lounge room, in your home, just being you.
It's the song that's important.
It's the song that's important. Thank you so much for joining us on the Magic of Songwriting podcast.
It's been lovely. Thank you.
I really enjoyed this conversation and I look forward to sharing it with everybody. Thank you for listening. It's been a pleasure to spend this time with you. To help others connect with the magic of songwriting, we'd love it if you'd take a moment to rate or review our podcast or share it with anyone you think would benefit from it. And if you want to find your community of songwriters, visit us at iHeartSongwritingClub.com and let us help you reconnect with the magic of songwriting.